Good evening. Thank you very much for hanging in with us this evening. I'm Dave Schrader, your host here on Coast to Coast AM. I'll be back again with you next Friday night. My very special guest, Dr. Barry Taff. We'll talk about forbidden science, warp drive, transporters, and zero-point energy. Our guest believes that the government is already capable of doing these things and interplanetary visits. We'll find out more about that next Friday when I return to Coast AM. Tonight, we're going to spend the next 3 hours with our guest, Dr. Ted Chu. His book is called Human Purpose and Transhuman Potential, A Cosmic Vision for Our Future Evolution. Transhumanism, playing God. Should we begin to manipulate science and kickstart our next position in the evolutionary chain? There's so many different parts of this topic that we need to talk about, the science, the philosophy, the understanding of exactly what it means to make that next leap. When we come back, we'll talk with our guest. We'll open up phone lines in the fourth hour for you to chime in and give us your thoughts on this very controversial subject. Stay tuned. Human Purpose and Transhuman Potential right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. Human Purpose and Transhuman Potential, A Cosmic Vision for Our Future Evolution. That's the name of the book. Author is Ted Chu, PhD. He is formerly the chief economist at General Motors, and Ted Chu was also chief economist for Abu Dhabi Investment Authority for the last 15 years. His second career has been spent in conducting independent interdisciplinary research on the philosophical question of humanity's place in the universe, with special reference to our post-human future. Building on his lifelong interest in the frontiers of economic and evolutionary progress, he was born and raised in China, and Chu earned his PhD in economics at Georgetown University. He's currently clinical professor of economics at New York University at Abu Dhabi. Welcome to the show, Mr. Chu. I appreciate you spending some time with us this evening.
Thank you, David. It's my pleasure to come on your wonderful show and sharing with you and the audience some of my thoughts about the future of humanity and what it means for every one of us.
Let's find out some of your history and understand you. I mean, as an economist, it seems like a strange jump to go from an economist to talking about the human purpose and our potential. And where we should be going on this. How did you get to this point in your life, and what brought this about?
Yes, I can. A lot of people ask me about this question, right? You're an economist. Why do you want to do philosophical research? And then secondly, why do you want to publish this book? So the origin of thinking about the humanity actually started when I was 29. I had a somewhat of a midlife crisis that my life was going on very, very well at the time. All of a sudden, I felt a loss of meaning about the future of my life and about the future of the entire world. So I started to do some philosophical research. And after several years of intense study, I realized that I have this vision that it's so clear and it's so enjoyable to hold that vision. Then I told my wife that, look, I need to do a little bit more research. I want to share my happiness with everybody. And so that took several more years of intense study. I was reading about a book a day and talking to experts in a lot of a wide range of different fields, going way beyond economics. I went through two personal crises. The first one was attending a conference in the World Trade Center on the day of 9/11 really hit me really hard, because my manuscript at that time was writing on paper was destroyed in 9/11. And then secondly, I was chief economist for General Motors. So the bankruptcy of the company really hit me hard, because I had to work 60 hours a week trying to save the company from bankruptcy and then to help the U.S. to recover from the economic crisis. So these events really hit me hard, but then maybe I think maybe it's testing my will, whether I can persist in terms of holding my vision for the future. And then finally, a couple years ago, while I was working at Abu Dhabi Investment Authority, I talked to my boss and said, I want to publish this book. And he said, no, you cannot do that because your position as a chief economist at the big sovereign wealth fund, what you say to the public is going to move the market because we control hundreds and hundreds of billion dollars of wealth. So I finally took the plunge to give up this very high-paying job to join New York University so I can speak my mind. And so here comes the book. I think it's a long story, but to sum it up, I have a strong conviction, and I'd like to share my thoughts with people because I strongly believe we're going to be living in a very exciting period of time. That's probably the third most interesting time throughout human history.
Let me take you back for a few seconds, Ted. You said something fascinating. I mean, kind of having this crisis in your own life, things that changed. You were in World Trade Center 3 when the attacks happened?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. So I was attending the annual conference for business economists, and we were eating breakfast and then listening to the morning session speaker. And then all of a sudden, the chandelier on the floor, on the ceiling of the floor, started to shake and making dingling sounds. Initially, we believe maybe that's an earthquake, right? And then a few seconds later, this huge sound of thump, boom, goes through the building. And then we realized that something hit the building. And we still thought that it's maybe just a accident or something. But luckily, we quickly exited the building. We were on the ground floor so that we got out very, very quickly. But that was a life-changing event, and also it forced me to restart my research project because I have a thick pile of a manuscript that was in my hotel room that I wasn't able to retrieve.
But you were part of one of the most devastating attacks in history, and you were right there on site for this to take place. Did that shake, I mean, was that part of your existentialist crisis that helped kind of shape the idea of wanting to know where we go from here? Is this all that human potential is peaking at? You know, was that part of why you were so intrigued in trying to get to the answers and understand the next level?
Yes, I certainly believe that at a personal level, it hit me really, really hard. And I also believe that it somewhat dented American public's psyche, that maybe we're not so secure about the future. Maybe we ought to think about the fundamental changes going forward, that the human nature is not something that we should take for granted.
In your opinion, Dr. Chu, explain for, well, not even in your opinion, but your perception of transhumanism for our listeners that may not understand it and may be intimidated by the idea of what we're speaking about. Break it down so that they can understand where you're coming from with tonight's project and what we plan to share.
Yeah, in a nutshell, transhumanism is the belief that the humanity, or the human being as we know us today, is not the end of the process of change or evolution in the world. So this is a belief that there are more advanced species and advanced intelligence is going to be coming after us. So this is the belief. It's called the transhumanism, or in a recent popular press, it's called something called a singularity, that there's going to be higher beings that's going to transcend human beings. But I think there's a lot of misconception about the transhumanism and about the singularity, because the negative reaction to this kind of radical thinking is that, look, you know, this means the end of humanity. This means that we are not going to be needed, and we're going to be replaced, and we're going to be made redundant.
Well, transhumanism is one thing. The singularity, as I understand it, that's the moment that life and artificial intelligence come together and the spark of life is taken from there. The next evolution is, we're hearing some of these stories. I know we just did a news story a few weeks ago on Darkness Radio talking about a billionaire who has plans to download his memories and information into a robotic body, which has been part of sci-fi and television and movies for decades, the idea that doing this, but now it's becoming real and that next step is not that far away. So am I understanding that correctly? The singularity is the melding of these two sources coming together to create a whole new spark of life?
Yes, absolutely. So what's going to coming after us, either coming from modified human beings or from brand new, you know, artificial intelligence, robots or the cyborgs. So these are the two channels that we can get to the post-human future. So as I mentioned earlier, that there's a lot of misconceptions about this post-human future. A lot of people believe that it means the end of humanity. I have a different opinion because I believe that this is going to be the great opportunity for us to advance humanity, to really amplify rather than eliminate the human spirit. So this
why do you believe it's our job, though? I mean, why should science take over and push forward the evolutionary chart that much quicker? I mean, history has been working pretty well for us, you know, from amoebas to slugs to monkeys to man. Here we stand now, and we seem to have progressed. And even just in the last 50 to 100 years, the intellect, the way that we handle things seems to be getting better, stronger than we've ever been in the past. Is it really necessarily a good idea to push things further? And I know that sounds very basic and weird to actually think, yeah, of the whole idea of humanity is to continue to press the boundaries and move forward. But, you know, I understand in the science and technology, but when we begin to mess with the human content, is that a good plan?
Yes. A lot of people ask me about this, right? So they say, Ted, you know, look at the human progress, and we've made a lot of progress, especially since the Industrial Revolution that started, 200 to 300 years ago. My answer is on two fronts. Number one, on the theoretical front, I think the Darwin's evolutionary theory is still being misunderstood. That people tend to think that this is a theory explains the origin, explains how the history has played out so far. What most people don't understand is that the real implication, if you read Darwin carefully, or if you read the other traditional religious and spiritual scriptures carefully, the idea of evolution means that the progress of the complexation or the progress of the intelligence of the mind of life will not end with humanity. To the contrary, the theory predicts that we should continue to mark forward. So that's on the theoretical level. On the practical level, as a business economist for 25 years, looking and watching the global economy advance, I believe at this point, humanity is becoming a bottleneck in terms of economic growth. When you look at what the economists are saying about the future of the U.S. economy, we have had experienced a sluggish, very, very sluggish recovery in the post-Great Recession era since 2009. And some of that reason is cyclical, but a lot of that reason is structural. I think without thinking about liberalizing us from our biological constraints, we're going to stuck in this low growth and weak economy state, and that certainly is not going to do us any good. So I think it is coming to a point, and I think increasingly more and more economists are recognizing this, that humanity or human resources has been the greatest source of economic growth and improvement of the human condition so far. But going forward, that is going to be becoming more of a headwind and becoming more of a bottleneck. So I think both on the theoretical level and on the economic necessity level, I think it is time to move forward.
Well, certainly. I mean, there's a lot to be said, especially in the medical field. And if we can start to, you know, they've been talking so much about stem cell research and being able to cure diseases and fix problems, you know, maybe even helping to regrow limbs for people that have lost them, to help reattach the senses for people that have had severed spinal columns or damaged spines, broken backs, and being able to help those you know, the wiring back together and get these people whole again by using science. To me, that's understandable. It's the idea of, you know, like the article, the op-ed piece that came out at the end of February with, I think, the New York Times, Marcy Darvinovsky talks about the fact that at the beginning of March, the Food and Drug Administration had a meeting to consider radical biological procedures that, if was successful, would actually produce genetically modified human beings. Mm-hmm. Which a lot of people feel is a very dangerous step, because the techniques would actually change every cell in the bodies of children that are born as a result of their use. And these alterations would actually be passed down to future generations, where you could say in some levels, okay, look, it's helping out because what they're doing, the FDA is calling them the mitochondrial manipulation technologies, right? Where they're the procedures removing the nuclear material either from the egg or embryo of a woman that has, if I understand, like an inheritable mitochondrial disease, and then inserting it into a healthy egg or embryo of a donor.
Yes.
And then taking that nuclear material that's been discarded, then any of that offspring is now going to carry actually genetic material from three different people and start to change the way humanity progresses. And we don't know how that long-term effect is going to play out. And although they're testing it in apes or testing it in mice, those are still some, you know, pretty dodgy subjects to try to figure out how it's going to progress the human race. If our bodies and our DNA are set up to be handled a certain way, and we start flipping switches and triggers and changing the parameters, what new diseases, what new problems can we unleash? I mean, is that a concern for you as we begin to tamper with the science of creating life?
Yes, and I think you're absolutely right that we are getting this, you know, modified human beings started, right? So when the post-human era officially starts, is that we're going to modify the human genome to such an extent that the new human being, the new beings, are not going to be able to interbreed with the existing human beings. So then we will have a new species. So to explain the new procedure that the FDA is considering, it is unprecedented in the sense that we're going to have babies with three parents. And what I wonder is that, you know, if we can do it with three parents, why cannot we do it with 10 parents? Why cannot do it with 100 parents? Why cannot do it with artificial parents? So, you know, we're traveling really down this path, and it opens up so much opportunities, but also risks and dangers. So the purpose of my research is to really to address these issues head on, to point out that in order to overcome fear, in order to address necessary risk assessment work, we really need to set up a higher goal for humanity, because we should not limit our sights at maximizing human happiness.
And
only
you
when
talked
we
about...
can set up a higher goal, then we can change. We can march forward with confidence.
Now, you talked about that there's many misconceptions about transhumanism. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to tackle some of those misconceptions as you see them and see if we can clear the way, make it a little bit more understandable for myself and for the listeners to see where the positives are in this and what we can do to go forward. I'd also like to know from your perspective, Dr. Chu, where could things go horribly wrong? The book is called Human Purpose and Transhuman Potential, A Cosmic Vision for Our Evolution, Our Future Evolution. We've got more coming up with our guest, Ted Chu, right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Human Purpose and the Transhuman Potential, A Cosmic Vision for Our Future Evolution. That's the topic this evening on Coast to Coast AM. While most have assumed that humanity Was it the end point of creation or the pinnacle of evolution? Our guest, Professor Ted Chu, makes the provocative claim that the human race may, in fact, be a means rather than an end, that humankind will give rise to something new. Our guest is with us for the remainder of the show. We'll be opening up phone lines in a little bit if you have questions for our guest. Human Purpose and Transhuman Potential, A Cosmic Vision for Our Future Evolution is the name of the book. Dr. Chu, you were talking about the fact that there's a lot of misconceptions about transhumanism and our evolution. Let's start to tackle some of those so that maybe we can understand your perspective on them a little better.
Sure.
In your opinion, what are some of the biggest misconceptions that have plagued man, you know, with the whole idea of opening up our future and making that next evolutionary jump?
Yes, the biggest misconception, I believe, is the conception that the transhumanism or the post-human future or the technological singularity is going to bring maximum human happiness without side effects. I think this is just not consistent with where we came from and not consistent with what we know about changes in culture, changes in nature throughout history, throughout over 13 billion years of evolution that's happening, that has happened in the universe. I think failure and I think disasters are inevitable in the future. So I think we need to be clear that the future is not going to be a smooth sailing. So that's why some book reviewers believe that what I have written is actually something called Religion 2.0, is that I believe that we need to bring back faith. We need to develop a higher goal, the goal that is higher than the happiness of human beings, the goal that is consistent with the highest human aspirations that ever developed in human history, which is to be one with the universe, to answer God's calling. Or in the Chinese way, we call this qi tian xing dao, which is to carrying out the Dao for the heavens. I think we need those higher aspirations. Otherwise, we're going to be so afraid, so scared of moving forward that we end up in a stagnation and eventual decline.
But do you really feel that that's really a possibility? I mean, we continue to push boundaries all the time with science and make changes. You know, there's a discussion of the Montauk experiments. There's discussions of, you know, growing limbs and growing body parts that are currently going on in laboratories for testing. And they're trying to push these boundaries all the time. They've already done genetic splicing. I mean, the spider goat story that they've actually bonded spider DNA with goats so that they could milk the goats to get a very useful, very tensile strong thread or silk from that to create better and more effective bulletproof vests, cargo netting, things along those lines. It seems like science is progressing already. I don't think there's a question that we're going to stop and say, well, maybe we're at the point of, you know, we're already at our apex here. I don't think that's on the forefront at all. Do you believe that that is part of where we're at in your assumption?
Well, I think if we don't have a higher goal, we don't have a clear vision of where we're headed, we face the danger of the governments or the social elites deciding that this is not the right thing to do. We're on a slippery slope for self-destruction. And we ought to stop. When you look at history, actually, these kind of things happened. In the 17th century, the Japanese government believed that the firearms violated the interest of Somalis, right? Those people who have the swords. And they banned the firearms. And so for over 200 years, Japan gave up the arms. So the government control, the government decision to stop the technologies moving forward can certainly happen. And right now, you hear about the biologists, the neuroscientists, they are moving forward. But at what point can the government allow us to move forward at full speed and to put the power into the hands of ordinary people rather than in the educated elite? I think this is one of my top concerns going forward.
But well, that's a utopian. Utopian environment, though. And I mean, it's already taking place. The government already has an unbelievable control on humanity. And I think a lot of us have been dumbed down to an unbelievable rate because things that are going on right now, I don't know that my grandparents or your grandparents would have settled for what's going on in the geopolitical climate around the world. There seems to be a place where we've relinquished power. And we're blindly following and allowing the government to tell us what is best for us already. That already seems to be in play. And I agree with you. It'd be great if we could take that back. But how do you do that? Nobody seems to get up in arms. It's very small factions of people that take personal offense or problems with some of the atrocities that are going on around the world. Everybody else seems too busy with their face buried into their iPhones and their tablets and their computer systems and just ways to help the pain pleasure principle, which is, as you mentioned, we've got to elevate beyond just the happiness quotient. But that's what's driven humankind through history. It's what can we do to please that pain pleasure principle at all times.
Yes, David, I agree with you. I think that most people are not going to be driven by the higher vision. But as thinking people, right, some people with a highly reflective mind, we should be thinking about this situation, especially the coming issue. Right? The issue is right in front of us with this three-parent baby issue that when we look at history, we actually had a very painful experiences called the eugenics that is top down, that was originated by governments in including the U.S. but particularly in Europe, and ended up with a very very bad situation where the government, especially the Nazis in Germany, decided that we are going to decide which race is superior, and then we're going to promote that, and we're going to decide which race is inferior, and then we're going to eliminate that. I think that is the most danger that I look at a post-human future. So I believe that at some point, as the genetics and the neuroscience advance to a certain stage, we ought to allow people to make decisions. And people are going to make mistakes, but the mistakes made at the ground level is going to be much more tolerable and survivable than mistakes that if we decide that it's going to go from top down. I grew up in communist China. I know all the dangers of top-down control.
And it sounds great that, people should uprise. And the thinkers have always been there. Dr. Chu, they're always thinking and trying to see how they can progress. But when the government has a different ideal, they don't want us to rebel or push against. I think that's part of why they're so intrigued by the ability for transhumanism. What can they change and alter so that they have an easier, more controllable subject that does what they want, acts as they want, and can also be fixed so that their strength, their intelligence quotient, their health, all of those things are directly influenced by the choices of a greater scale than just us, the people that want better for us and healthier lifestyles and having the ability to switch on intelligence and change these things in us. Some things go away for a reason. And right. I mean, some of our traits have passed, from having tails and webbed hands and feet and things like that. They go away for a reason. And if we start messing too much with the genetics of humanity and pushing those boundaries, aren't we just asking for overlords, for lack of a better term, to start choosing and making these decisions for us? Because even if we believe that science and the government have our best interest in mind, I think it's pretty naive of us to actually stand back and say, oh yeah, we'll trust that they'll make the right decisions. As a layperson, I don't know what they're doing with the genetic work and the mitochondrial work that they're doing. I don't know what they're switching on and switching off. I don't know how much they're monkeying around with the DNA soup that is created by humanity already. Shouldn't we be more concerned about that aspect of this? I mean, is that a misconception in your opinion that is much bigger danger than people are giving it credit for?
Yeah, I think so. I think I would recommend people who are interested in this area read Freeman Dyson's work. Was written more than 10 years ago. He wrote that the next revolution is going to be biological revolution, and the revolution is not going to be happening mainly in the NIH-supported professional research labs, but it's going to be happening in people's garages. Why is that? Well, because the pace of the technological advance is such that the tinkering of life forms, not only just human beings, but all sorts of life forms, are going to be available on your desktop and available so you can tinker with it in your garage. And I think there is a lot of concerns about this losing control. And moving forward, then we need to be clear, right? We need to be clear where we're headed, and we need to be clear about the risk management mechanisms and policies. But to say that just because the process is going to be out of control of the government or out of control of certain authorities, this is going to be necessarily a disaster for us. I think history shows otherwise.
Now, did you say you do believe that the revolution will be handled at home, will be handled in the garages, that technology will eventually be in our hands, that we'll be able to start making those changes? Or did I misunderstand that?
Yes, that's what Freeman Dyson predicted, and that's what's happening right now. We're not at that stage yet, but we should be start to thinking about this. To take an example of the cost of sequencing your human genome, in year 2000, it cost over $10 million to sequence your genome. Now the costs have dropped from $10 million to about $1,000, and it's quickly going down to $100. And someday it may go even down further. So the cost is going to coming down very, very rapidly and enable the technology to spread. And this is what I believe it's the real potential of the transhuman future lays, not at the professional research level, but at the grassroots level. And whether this should be allowed, I think it's subject to debate. And I hope my research should shed some light on this issue.
To me, it seems almost more frightening to put it in the hands of the people, Dr. Chu, because if it's in the hands of the people who maybe don't have the same type of knowledge and understanding that scientists have working in this field, and just because it becomes more affordable doesn't mean that it's something that people should be messing with on their own. As a human race, we're a greedy, lazy lot for the most part. I mean, people make really dumb decisions to try to, again, help and curb that pain pleasure principle by putting it into the hands of the people. And trust me, I'm not in the I don't believe that government should overlord on everything we do. I don't believe that they should decide who makes these decisions or not. I believe that we, the people, should work together at a brighter future. But by putting it in the hands of we, the people, I think that sometimes that makes it even more ugly and a bigger cost in the future, because people who don't really understand the science of what they're doing start tinkering and modifying and changing. And that's when we start to see really horrific examples and nightmares of science come forward, or do you not see that as a real problem?
Well, let me make 2 points. First,
please.
Yes. First, I do not believe that everything should run free. I believe in necessary government regulations. I believe the necessary public debate about whether certain things should be allowed. So I'm not suggesting that we should get rid of the government, should get rid of regulation. In fact, I think as we put power into the hands of people, the regulations, the controls ought to be tighter. So that's point number one. Point number two is that when you look at history, the true creativity, the true flourishing of new technologies or new life forms is always going to be coming from the ground up. So let me give you one example. We all know that the IT revolution happened in America. It actually happened in the 1980s when the economic strength of the U.S. was actually weaker than the economic strength of Japan, when a lot of people in the 1980s were predicting that Japan is going to be number one. So now both countries were in the race to advance IT technologies. And the two countries took a very dramatically different strategies to achieve this goal. In Japan, it is centrally controlled. The government organizes a dozen of large companies and research institutes and universities to launch this national project. They call it the fifth generation computers. Whereas in the U.S., it's decentralized. It's the startups like Microsoft and Sun Microsystems and so on and so forth, Apple, so on and so forth. And 20 years later, we know what the result is, right? The government-sponsored and controlled project in Japan went nowhere, and the U.S. really prospered. After a period of struggle, over 90% of the IT startups in the Silicon Valley ultimately failed or merged, absorbed into other companies. But we end up with a thriving ecosystem. We end up with the leading nation, leading the IT revolution. So there are many, many examples throughout the history that you can point to suggest that the real power is actually going to be the personal initiatives rather than government control. But as I mentioned earlier, the personal initiatives ought to be monitored, ought to be regulated by the authorities to making sure that the personal self-interest drives are not going to be in conflict with the broad strategy, which I believe is going to be, we are, you know, as you mentioned earlier, we seem to be inevitably marching towards this post-human future.
Quick question before we go to break. Do you believe that we are already experiments of this, that transhumanism has already been taking place in small ways?
We are in the initial stage. And I don't believe that the transhuman future is here yet. As I mentioned earlier, there can be a rough definition of the transhuman future, which means that we're going to be creating some biological species that we cannot interbreed with, or we're going to be creating artificial intelligence that is so intelligent that they are self-conscious. They have the ability to do things to do everything that human beings can do and more. You know, when we reach that stage, then I think we have reached the post-human era. We're not there yet, but all the technological development, including some of those genetic modification techniques on humans and non-humans, as you mentioned earlier, all these techniques are laying the ground for the future.
Human purpose and transhuman potential, a cosmic vision for our future evolution. Ted Chu, PhD, is our guest. We're going to take a top of the hour break. We'll come back. We'll continue to explore this. What are the markings for us to watch for? Where are we going? And what does our guest see is a probable future? How far into the future do we have to go to see these changes start to take effect? He said we're in the beginning stages now. When will it fully bloom? We'll find out more from our guest, Ted Chu, when we return to Coast AM.